those words. I now knew the true meaning. I feel like the dark sky is simply consuming my prayers, or the river is dragging them down the street, not allowing them to be heard. But suddenly, everything seems to become silent. I can still see the helicopter marching through the sky, but I hear nothing. Then I hear it, a whisper, a gentle, loving voice. I'm here, and I knew she was.
This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts. We just heard theater artists Yasmin Rivakaba, Rusty Tennant, and Damaris Webb, each talking about their work for the We Can Listen series, Spotlight on Equity in the Arts. It was presented on October 16th by the Old Church Concert Hall and recorded by Darren Oberg and hosted by Jane Vogel. For more info about the We Can Listen series, visit theoldchurch.org. I also have that link as well as the artist info and the podcast of this show at kboo.fm/stageandstudio and stageandstudio.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. Till next time, I'm Dime Roberts. We're going to go out with more music by Joe Kai at joekai.com.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sister Mary Project on Saturday, November 3rd at the Claygate Estate Vineyard in Newburgh, Oregon. The Sister Mary Project is an event to raise awareness for multiple sclerosis and to recognize local caregivers. The Sister Mary Project will perform, and there will be information, beverages, and snacks Saturday, November 3rd. Again, that's the Sister Mary Project on Saturday, November 3rd at the Claygate Estate Vineyard, 17205 Northeast Dop Road in Newburgh, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Portland 5 Centers for the Arts. Presenting Mystery Science Theater 3000 Live, Friday, November 9th, at Arlene Snitzer Concert Hall, featuring The Brain at the 7 p.m. showtime and Deathstalker 2 at 10 p.m. More information online at portland5.com.
Love and life interested me so that I dared to knock at the door of the cosmos. Love and life interested me so that I dared to knock at the door of the cosmos.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Betty Daniel and Mia O'Connor Smith. They are producers of Deep Underground, an open mic project in Portland, and curators of Monuments, the Earth Expedition of Sun Ra, which is on now at the Portland Art Museum through January 27th. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thanks for having us.
So this exhibition is about Sun Ra and his orchestra. And some people know who Sun Ra is. Probably most KBOO listeners are aware of him. And he was a crazy musician and eccentric. But there's a lot more to this man and his band who put out 280 records, was it? 240 releases, yeah, something crazy.
He's incredibly the of all time.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you've created a show and it's about him and his work, but just tell us a little bit about Sun Ra, the man.
Sun Ra is a legendary jazz composer. He's a master of everything he's ever studied, learned about. He's a scholar, he is a poet, he is a illustrator, he is a teacher, he's a math teacher at that. He's just a holistic Black Afrofuturist leader and revolutionary.
And when did he live?
Sun Ra was born in
1934
to 1993. Yes. And he arrived here from Saturn, and his first destination was Birmingham, Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He had 15,000 volumes in his library.
Yes, he did. He was a scholar of many. He was big on learning different like theologies and philosophies of all over the world, of all times, and had respect for enlightenment from all corners of this planet, and brought his own enlightenment for the people as well.
So he was in a band. He called it his orchestra, A-R-K. Mm-hmm. What does that mean, ark?
Do you want to break that down?
Well, from what research I had done in the South...
This is Mia, by the way.
Yes, mm-hmm. This is Mia. In the South, they had pronounced orchestras as orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, in the marketing of it all, decided to go with that mm-hmm. wording and spelling until it stuck. You know, some people still thought they were going by orchestra, but they were mm-hmm. claiming the slang, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was like about, I think Sun Ra was very, was a decolonized mind in the sense where orchestra, from what I've read, is that's how Black people have always pronounced orchestra, is orchestra. So instead of like conforming to how society wants you to spell it or do it or whatever, he would say orchestra. And he was really big on like the breakdown of words. And if you break down orchestra, R, the AR is Ra backwards. And then kiss is an Egyptian word that I think means like, I think it means sun, like the beam of the sun or like the shine of the sun rather than like the sun. And so he was into like the breakdown of words because he found a lot of like knowledge in them.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see that in like a lot of his writing.
So as a band, I've seen them on stage, on video, there's like dozens of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a jazz. That they're improvising, or are they playing strictly to your score?
Yeah, they had like over 100 people going in and out of the orchestra over like 40, 50 years, and they're still playing, and they still live in the house together, and they never decided what they would play when they played shows, but they so they would improvise the set list, and within that they would improvise as well. So they would play songs that they've obviously mastered and practiced, and they would occasionally play songs that are like covers of like artists that Sun Ra was inspired by, and then they would improvise for lots of the show too.
Mm-hmm.
And Sun Ra would write he wrote pretty much every mm-hmm. instrument's part.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like they would be, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, he's a true composer.
Mm-hmm. So there's a photo in there of him. No, I think it's in the video. He's playing the keyboards,
mm-hmm.
but he's kind of leaning over it and sort of caressing it, mm-hmm. almost like, I don't know, it's like he's dancing. He's not really playing the way people sit at a keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's connecting.
Yeah. Was a stage show theatrical like that?
Yeah, sometimes people couldn't even handle watching the orchestra. Like even like they would truly enjoy it, but it was so powerful, and whatever they were in tune with or what they were channeling was like so moving that people thought they saw colors. Like people thought that they were hallucinating when they would watch him play, because it would be such a like an unbelievable eccentric performance. Like there's lots like it's. Yeah, Sun Ra could play the keys backwards. He could play three keyboards at a time. He didn't have to look at them. Same with like Marshall Allen and John Gilmore. Like the way Marshall Allen plays, like you can't even keep up with his fingers. You have no idea what's going on, but there's sounds and colors and all types of things coming at you. But yeah, I've just heard a lot of testimony of people being like, this was the greatest show of my life, but like I had to go to the bathroom and breathe and come back. But yeah.
So as a band, the cast rotated, but there were some steady members, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And did they all live in a house together in Philly?
The more steadier members did. The more steadier members did. Marshall Allen played with Sun Ra for, Marshall Allen's played with Sun Ra for over 50 years. John Gilmore was a very down member. Kalon Phil Coran was a really down member. He was a engineer of instruments, Phil Coran. He like created the francophone and made like the harp and made drums for the orchestra, and a lot of them credit any most of them stuck with the orchestra, and a lot of them credit Sun Ra for their first interaction with like elevated music, and they took that on with them to the people that they played with outside of that. But they most of them didn't really play much outside of what they did with the orchestra. Okay. Like a lot of them did, but the core members really stuck with him. And Marshall Allen still lives in the house to this day with I think 6 or 7 other members.
And we can't forget June Tyson.
Yes.
Also another important player.
June
Tyson. She was the vocalist. Pretty much the leading vocalist in every song you could think of, really. Mm-hmm.
So when you go into this exhibit, it's on the fourth floor of the Mark Building, you know, the modern wing. Mm-hmm. You go to the top and you have that. You face a wall and you go left or right. So to the left is a room full of artifacts. So albums, album covers, musical instruments, photos. And if you go to the right, there are more photos, like stills from the famous film. Mm-hmm. And then there's a room with furniture where you can watch a video for an hour. So if we turn left in the main room there, there's a stage. It's a round stage with a ramp. And then on it are 3 mannequins with costumes on. Mm-hmm. So tell us about those costumes.
Instead of calling them costumes, we call them performance attire. And those were created by folks at the Portland Garment Factory, led by Britt Howard and her team. And we have, as well as the pieces that they created, an original vest that Sun Ra actually wore to like be a part of that stage set.
And where did that vest come from? It's a kind of a black waistcoat with brocade, like gold all over it.
You should just come see it.
Where did it come from?
It came in a box, in the mail. That was just
a lot of the stuff came from really magical boxes that have been like kind of undercover for quite a while. We're not exactly sure what era that vest is from, but someone in our circles had it and reached out. We've been I would like to give a shout out to Eric at Mississippi Records, who's been like an amazing consultant, an amazing connector, who's connected us to a lot of people that have just had this stuff in their homes and have wanted to give it to us to make it accessible to people.
So Libby told me, the curator of the whole series told me, that some guy was walking along the street in Philly and there was a whole box of stuff on the curb from the Sun Ra house, and he grabbed it and he knew he should hang on to it, and he did. Yes. So some of that has ended up in the show, right?
Yes, a lot of it has. It's been in it's the Marshall Allen, who's now the conductor of the orchestra. He threw this stuff out on the side of the road one day, and luckily this person came across it and passed it along to a friend who's had it in his closet for like 30 years. So some of the stuff hasn't been seen since 1988.
Kept in really great shape.
Yeah.
And like that's how so many of the things came to us. It's just like the word and the knowledge of Sun Ra like being shared in the museum. And they were like, oh my gosh, I have to get these things to them. Like this is important to be a part of it.
So they thought, oh, it's a big museum. Let's cooperate.
I think they're just trying to make it accessible to people. Like people know how inaccessible institutions make work for the communities that they honestly belong to. Like these shouldn't even really be in the hands of the people that they're in the hands of. So I think they just were doing their due diligence and was like, you need to spread the good word. Anybody that's into Sun Ra is not just like mediocrely, averagely into Sun Ra. Like you're either like you can't stand it because you can't like you can't resonate with it or can't elevate with it, or like you're completely submerged and obsessed because you know it's always one way or the other. And like it seems like it's a really like cool community of people like internationally that really appreciate Sun Ra, and it feels like the energy that like we've put into it like attracted a lot of this energy, and people wanted to give that energy back, and we're really excited about that. These all came from good hands. These aren't all like artifacts that are from like institutions that have been like holding them in cellars for a really long time. These are like artifacts that were handed off from the, by like the orchestra to these people.
So the stage show had a lot of like Egyptian imagery in it. Mm-hmm. So what was Sun Ra's connection to the idea of, you know, Egyptian deities?
It's his lineage.
Mm-hmm.
It's his lineage, and it's not like a where he's just pulling from like for inspiration. Like this is in his blood.
Yeah, and he like researched his mm-hmm. histories, mm-hmm. our history.
Yes.
And that like is why he's presenting like images that we should recognize, mm-hmm. and like pulling from the history in the past.
It's his ancestral knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The other parts of the show around the walls, you've got a picture of him when he was a young man, and he was in like a big band or something. He was in an orchestra.
Yes, he. The picture of him, Well, when he was more of like a studio musician and he was kind of just like contributing to like the music industry in a sense, that was for like from that time era. He like started, I can't remember the first band he started playing with, but soon after he met one of his inspirations, Fletcher Henderson, who he's like most credited for, like the pretty much the only inspiration I could truly identify from Sun Ra. Like,
what was that name?
Fletcher Henderson.
Okay.
Yeah, amazing pianist. Yeah, and he had met Fletcher Henderson around that time and got to play with him a little bit, and the orchestra, like one of the few things that they actually do cover that's not theirs are Fletcher Henderson pieces. And one time a member of the Fletcher Henderson band had watched the orchestra play live, and they played a Fletcher Henderson song and said that they played it so precisely, they played it so perfectly, that they even played the mistakes that they made in the record that they did not intend to play. And I don't know, it's really cool. It's just reflective of like the code of discipline that Sun Ra operates by.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, for like forever and always.
So I mean, this was a 60s experimental jazz thing, 70s. How did two young women in Portland now come to be such big fans of Sun Ra and his orchestra?
I would credit the first people to really open my eyes to Sun Ra is Vaughn Kimmins and Andre Burgos of Brown Calculus.
Yeah.
They're musicians based here in Portland, and their music project, Brown Calculus, is very much inspired by Sun Ra and June Tyson and the legacy that these artists have led.
Where do they play?
Brown Calculus? All over,
everywhere. All
they
the
play
time.
A lot of places in Portland. They're going out of town. Seattle. They played in San Francisco, Chicago,
Philly.
What kind of
Puerto Rico?
What kind of music would you call it?
Okay, I would say it's like what Sun Ra would dream about in 2018. Like that's like the sound of his dreams.
Yeah,
spacey
Afrofuturism. Yeah, very much inspired by the cosmos.
And very uplifting and positive, mm-hmm. like Vaughn's words
absolutely.
Are.
They're just poetic.
Yeah, they're poetic and like things that you should repeat back to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Affirming.
Yeah, mm-hmm. affirmations.
Yeah, they're
mantras.
Affirmations.
So Brown Calculus introduced you to Sun Ra catalog. And how do you explore it? You know, what do you buy vinyl, or do you go on Spotify, or what?
I guess, well, the way that I came across Sun Ra are artists, like just producers that have sampled Sun Ra. So like Quasimodo, who I was listening to this morning, is one of the bigger reasons why I listened to Sun Ra. And kind of originally it was like through the exploration of like hip hop and where people were like getting these crazy sounds from, and a lot of them were from like Sun Ra's weird spaceship sounds that were like way ahead of his time. And from there I like to collect records, so like through record collections, through like conversation, through like the visual art. He has a really big catalog, so you kind of just have to like dive in, but it's really easy to
mm-hmm.
Dive in. It's very, very easy to.
Is it, what if you're a total newbie, what would mm-hmm. be a good compilation to get your hands on?
I would start with like Fate Is a Pleasant Mood It's one of the, I think it came out in the late 50s. I feel like that's kind of a, it's kind of like a milder like introduction into Sun Ra. Do you have any tips? Any ways in?
I really love the heliocentric worlds of Sun Ra, mm-hmm. Lanquidity, and a fireside chat with Lucifer. Mm-hmm. Those are my like number like
oh
top
my
three.
God, I gotta listen yeah. to that.
Lanquidity is a really good way to start too, and then it just gets more and more intense from there.
Mm-hmm.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Betty Daniel and Mia O'Connor Smith. They are curators of Monuments, which is on now at the Portland Art Museum through January 27th. The full title of that is Monuments, the Earth Expedition of Sun Ra. So did you conceive of the show as some kind of an expedition or a journey, or how did the original idea match up with what we can now see in the museum?
So our first visioning of the space definitely had like intentions of, for me, I was picturing like darkness in like how can we make the museum as black and spacey as possible, so that you can and not like spacey like outer space, but just like the way that Sun Ra's music makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted us to like just cross that line and experience the essence. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can do that in certain ways, and we learned as we went along the limits that institutions will kind of put on creating space like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, up there, they always have a room for video. You know, it's a dark mm-hmm. room with benches, and there's an experimental video on right now, mm-hmm. the cellist. Then they've had a crazy room, like you could climb in, and it was all like neon, day-glo, mm-hmm. black light, that. Like a couple of years ago. So there are opportunities to go, you know, be out there. But this show doesn't look dark, you know,
mm-hmm.
From what I saw. So what were the limits? And
well, we wanted to paint the space entirely black.
Yeah,
I think we're as black people, as being probably the first black people to truly have like it's really hard to have control over the narrative of a jazz artist, because white people are such enthusiasts about jazz. So we wanted to like just decolonize all the language possible around Sun Ra. We wanted to decolonize whiteness as like the basis of like purity, or like the basis of like an art gallery, or the basis of our White House, or the basis of like everything is white. So we really wanted to paint the space all black, but that was one of the things that probably that didn't manifest as a vision, but we'd like to share with the public as like what that intention was about. But we found different ways to do that, like the sound listening box, the sound space, mm-hmm. where you'll be able to interact with like my favorite photo of Sun Ra in there, and three really amazing hand-painted vinyls, and the three albums that are up right now that you can go ahead and listen to are Angels and Demons at Play, When Angels Speak of Love, and When the Sun Comes Out. And that space was painted black and is meant to be like an encompassing portal for people to be able to like immerse themselves in sound and sound only. But yeah, that was like one of the little limitations. But otherwise, it's just kind of like we had cool reins on this, and it was really fun. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of like control that we took in like the language, particularly because it's hard for people to like honor and respect Sun Ra for some reason, like because he had like what he says is like, so he truly believes in it. He truly believes that this is what his art does. And we believe in what he's saying. Like we believe
Doug,
him.
Meaning deep underground.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We believe that he's from Saturn. Like we believe that math and music helped him through music he was able to travel into the cosmos. Mm-hmm. Like we believe him, and that's like something we really wanted to be able to express in the curation of this exhibit, and hope that that's like the way that it's absorbed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's a big wall of album covers, and a lot of them are hand drawn. So apparently, you could at a show, you could get like a hand colored in sleeve of a 12-inch record.
They would pat, like, that was their merch, was the hand drawn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where did you get all those?
Cool collectors, people who went to those shows and bought those records and saved them because they're amazing and one of a kind.
So the artwork is very disparate. It's like they didn't really have a style. I mean, the fonts are all different. The media are totally different. It's just very, you know, it's all over the place. Is that a function of it happening over like 40 years that things change? Mm-hmm. Were they always like that?
They're just always, they're artists. They're always reflecting the times, and the times change, and they've been playing for 50, 60 years now, you know, like the times are changing, the feelings are changing, and they're doing everything in present time. So I think when they were making those album covers to give out to people in real time, it was just a reflection of the exact feeling they felt in that time. Like it's, and the, all the, if you combine all the present feelings like any human feels, like, and you look at an array of like all the feelings you felt, they're all over the place. Like if you're human, and especially if you're from the cosmos, like they were. So I think that that's how that came out. It's, sometimes they did it. They wanted to, this is what they channeled. And sometimes this is what they channeled, and you'll be able to see that in all of the work.
Do they still do that when they play live? Do they do hand drawn covers?
No, I don't think so.
No,
I think, after, I couldn't tell you the year, but they decided that like that was, they couldn't get them off fast enough, you know.
Yeah,
they would be sketching in the tour bus and like then like just passing them out, you know. Like they didn't have, they had to just they had to dedicate themselves to the music, you know. So they don't have the time.
I should say January 2nd and 3rd they're actually playing here in Portland at the Art Museum.
Yes, they are.
At the Art Museum and the Hollywood Theater.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Have you seen them live?
Not yet.
No?
Mm-mm. No.
We will be.
Is there a ritual for first-timers?
I don't know what anybody else's ritual will be, but I'll definitely be preparing mentally for sure.
Yeah, we'll ask them.
And then November 16th, Space is the Place is on. Right,
yes.
Screened in the museum.
Yes, it's screening at the museum, at Northwest Film Center, at the Portland Art Museum at 7:30.
Oh, in the
Witzel. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then December the 6th, you're doing an open mic, and what else is happening?
The open mic will feature Lonnie Holly. It's on the first Thursday of December. I think that's the 7th, but I'm not sure. But so we'll be featuring Lonnie Holly, who used to live two blocks down the street from Sun Ra. He's an amazing, also Afrofuturist, crazy artist, and I really hope everybody will be able to come and enjoy. The museum will be free that day. First Thursdays are free.
Okay.
Yeah, a big part of the programming was making sure that's accessible to the community, so we tried to like coordinate so that they're on like First Thursdays or $5 Fridays and whatnot.
There was, when I was there, it was pre-opening, there was a woman editing video that is the video that shows on the wall. It's like an hour long.
Yes.
And she was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Because she's been around the world to like South Africa, where there are other Sun Ra fans.
Yes, yes, her name is Anaka. Yes.
And what's her role? Like, where did you find her?
Oh, Anaka is our sister. She's just our
sister. We've known her for a long time.
Yeah, we've known her for a really long time. And just an incredible artist, incredible person, really present person. And she's been doing video and photo work for a really long time. Her website's anaka.work. I think a lot of people are going to want to get in contact with her after seeing her work in the exhibit. She's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
But Sun Ra already has his own style of video, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he was like making video, pop videos before MTV, with this sort of symmetrical fades and, you know, imagery just sort of floating around him. So he was kind of ahead of his time in that
very much so.
Do you see that, like, in your contemporary world, what kind of things do you see in his work and the orchestra's work that could apply today?
I would say everything, like there's kind of this, like, something that we've experienced is, like, in the 4 years that we've been doing Deep Underground as an open mic and doing underground open mic, is that, like, there's this kind of like a black art renaissance that's going on, and a lot of it is inspired by the cosmos, is inspired by, like, ancient Egyptians, and is inspired just by, like, all the ancestral knowledge of all these black people, you know? Like, it's not even like it's inspired by, but it's also just in all of these people's bones. And yeah, you'll see it in production, you'll see it in visuals. Like, a lot of people are really doing interesting stuff with color theory and shapes and with these ancient symbols and colors and patterns, and also just in the really, like, eccentric sounds that are being used in music, like, by people like Frank Ocean and whatnot. Like, there's music that I can, like, directly identify from some of these artists that resemble Sun Ra.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Betty Daniel and Mia O'Connor Smith. They are producers of Deep Underground and Open Mic Project in Portland, and they're curators of Monuments, the Earth Expedition of Sun Ra, which is on now at the Portland Art Museum through January 27th. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This world is strange. Strange world to me. What is this meaning?